Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to Meet the Manager. It's our regular catch-up with the best advice from some of the community's top FPL managers of all time. Yes, we focus on those with an incredible rank history, but we're adding to that this season. We're including managers with an interesting story to tell about how FPL is impacting on their lives. We'll also focus on managers who are offering perhaps a unique or different insight into the game. And that's certainly the case today. So hopefully we'll, with their insight from them, we can, me and you, we can all go up the rankings. That's the aim anyway. Today, I'm joined by Vanya Guchev, who has two top 5K finishes, one in the top 2K, and is currently in the top 5K going into the final match of Game Week 8 in the 2021-22 season. What we'll do is find out a bit more about his career history, his tips for success, and then we'll take a look at his planning for game week 9. Vanya is also a former professional footballer and still a semi-pro footballer, so he has a rather different take on choosing footballers for his fantasy side as well. Vanya, how are you?
Hi Joe, hi everyone. I'm great. Monday night football ahead today, Champions League around the corner, international break is over. So everything is great. And yeah, I'm very glad that I could take part in my favorite series over the Fantasy Football Scout over the years. And it's like time flies because at some point I see the Nick Trigger Lips, I think, starting video in this series. I know him as a player like 10 years maybe that I have played because he was kind of a legend. And I never dreamed that I could take part in this series too. So yeah, it's great. And thanks for the opportunity.
No, it's a pleasure. Pleasure to see you on here. So, yeah, I introduced you. You're a former pro footballer, semi-pro, in your native Ukraine, which is where you're coming from today. So, yeah, tell us a bit about, you told me a bit before we came on air, but just tell me a bit about your history as a player in football.
Yeah, let's start with this. Okay, so I'm playing... Currently, I'm playing as a semi-pro, as you said, but previously I was playing like a professional footballer, but in the early years of my career, because I was playing for local clubs in my city, Kharkiv, like Metalist, Gelios, and some other names that won't say anything. But yeah, closer to 20th year, when I already was on contract with my local club, I was having a contract offer from Shakhtar Donetsk that currently playing in a Champions League every year. Yeah. But it's another city. It's a smaller city than my current city, have no facilities, for example, for studying and maybe like having the career and some education. But at this point, yeah, I turned down this offer and concentrate on my studying since I do not regret this decision because we have a very developed semi-professional football in my city. Mm-hmm. And that's why since then, I've already like 8 years, I have in the education that allow me to work on my interests. And also I'm currently still playing football very active on the semi-pro level. I have a club with a president, with a professional coach. We have like two, three trainings per week after work. And we have matches every weekend with leagues, championships, and some other stuff. So yeah, I'm delighted with how everything is going, despite the fact that I'm not playing as a professional anymore.
Yeah, no, excellent. Well, you sound obviously very, very happy with the situation so far. And also, what position do you play in on the pitch?
I was playing as a central midfielder, model like box to box, but more in attack. So Frank Lampard was always my idol. Ah. And I'm a Chelsea fan since childhood. Yeah.
So you're sort of a Mason Mount, Frank Lampard type.
Yeah, I think that Mason is close to it right now, but different formations for the managers right now. So it's like Gerard Lampard type of midfielder, very hard to find right now.
Okay, I mean, just before we look at your career history, as a footballer, I always find it quite interesting when you see manager quotes, when you see things happening on the pitch in the game, perhaps an injury or changing tactics and formation. Are there any examples of how you as a footballer have look as how has it influenced your fantasy football career?
Yeah, I will give a fresh example because everyone known with this case. Like when Ronaldo joined Manchester, and he was in training like 3 days after quarantine, and there was so much panic in the community about will Ronaldo start or not the game against Newcastle, and there were like video from Ole Gunnar with from press conference when he was like catch up with the questions like is Ronaldo will decide will he start or not and some other stuff. But I would say that I buy Ronaldo for this game because of course I captained him and I was having like zero panic about will he start or not because all you need to know was on the table, like just to see how Ronaldo was communicating when he come to Manchester. His family was flying to Manchester, as we all know, for this game. And even like he was in discussions with Ole all week, we see that everything was really showing that kind of player in this situation, he won't be benched for this first game week since he was already in training like 3 or 4 days, even better, have more days than Bruno and other stuff. So yeah, when I see that panic in communities the night before the deadline and in the morning that Ronaldo could not start, he will definitely come only for game or for 20 minutes or so, it was not the case. It's like not working this way for the players like Ronaldo. Of course, you would say that he was benched last week. Yeah, it was a little bit unexpected for me too, but not it's what it was a totally different case after he was like very exhausted against Villarreal in the second half of Champions League. So yeah, there are a lot of examples of how I maybe see the things a little bit different, but of course we need to understand that there are very subjectical things, and I did not have maybe some unique and specific knowledge that would differ me from totally differ me from other players. Because, for example, we see that right now to become the football coach, very successful football coach, and FPL is very similar yet to coaching at some perspective. A lot of coaches are not former professional players. A lot of successful coaches are not a good players or not a players at all. So yeah, of course it helps me at some sometimes it helps me, and I think we will dive in it a little bit later when I will said about my strategies at all. But yeah, generally speaking, there are some cases when I'm totally understand that some things are not working this way with footballers like Ronaldo came in training 3 days before his debut, his family flying to Manchester, and by some reasons he will be benched and have a cameo for 20 minutes. It's not the case, yeah.
So is that sort of insight into understanding things about their family and the body language and communication between the manager and the rest of the players when you're looking at the sign of training pictures that you see on social media
Yeah, I was seeing like Ronaldo speaking with Ole at some points when he arrived already. He was in training when the team was not in training at all generally. And the thing is that he should be treated differently. And even that Ole Gunnar will speak on press conference that of course he decide maybe Ronaldo will not start. Like 18% of the time, it's not what the managers really thinks. And the problem is that not every manager speaking like Bielsa may be very directly on will player play or not. Or it. So I would say that when the community trying to check every like word that manager said in the press conferences, it's not the very good way to analyze some things because in like 18% of the time, I did not know the manager that will said all the truth. For example, like Ronaldo is definitely starting. He is way above level that all our current players and so on. Never, never you will see like anything from the
So,
managers in that field.
I mean, regarding your own role in the team as a central midfielder, With Chelsea at the moment, for example, I and many others are considering getting Lukaku in. Some people already own Lukaku, but they need a central midfield by the looks of it to create chances. Are you spotting that as a central midfielder? Are you looking at the TV and thinking, oh, that's what a midfielder should be, creating these chances for Lukaku? Why isn't that happening? Are you looking at those kinds of things? Do you think it could happen?
Of course, as a Chelsea fan, I'm concerned with last games when Lukaku does not get enough moments and so on. But I would not be very worried about this, and I will be getting Lukaku this week in my team, and I do not own him for a while, but I will definitely. And I would say that a little bit over panicking about Lukaku for me currently in community, because for example, in the game against Southampton before the international break, he set up the perfect moment for Werner with a backheel pass, and after and the moments before the Chilwell goal, he hits the post, yeah, and he was like running after the mount pass into the box. He doing everything correctly. Again, a game against Bradford, I did not get like many people's so did not sell Ronaldo for a hit to Lukaku or even with a free transfer, because I think that currently Chelsea are not in a super good shape, and we could see that Tuchel using the Ruben Loftus-Cheek last 2 games, so he's still tweaking the lineup, and he's not satisfied with how we are playing currently. So it generally have an impact on Lukaku. It's very obvious, but at the same time, I think that he's doing his job very well, and he will be clicking soon. And when he's having that fixtures like Norwich, Burnley, and Newcastle, I think in the next three, it's obvious that the correct move is to get him. And
Okay.
if someone will not get him, and somehow Lukaku will end up with only like 1 or 2 goals in these fixtures, it's not would be like, oh, I said to you, it would be very like uncharacteristical for this case.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, I'm convinced. Let's have a look at your career history as well, because it's interesting. There's a couple of, I mean, a couple of two things of note, really. You've got these two absolutely fantastic ranks, 2014-15 and 15-16. But you look at the other ranks as well. There's only really one rank outside of the top 100K, and pretty much most of them are around the top 50K or well below. So there's a real consistency there of having consistently good ranks, and then these two stellar ones as well. Just what were there any particular reasons why you did so well in 2014 and 2015, and what happened in 2019?
Okay, so yeah, let's start with my worst season, because it was not far away from now, and I'm remembering it's absolutely very well, all mistakes and all problems with the season. So to summarize, it was really the season when not everything was not bad, because like prior to the new year, and I was ranked like 115K maybe, and exactly at this point, I think that I will definitely finish inside the top 100K as I always do. So I could allow myself to have some risks, because there will be a double game weeks and other interesting things. So I will definitely catch up if something working not great. And before the it was the year when Liverpool were flying to the World Cup, Clubs World Cup. And I sold Trent Alexander-Arnold and Mane, which were flying this year. And I think that it was a good opportunity, because like they would be missing like 2 3 games, I can have some differentials. What happened really when Trent Alexander-Arnold and Mane were back from World Cup, it was a game against Leicester, and Trent Alexander-Arnold hit like 24 points in this game, and Mane scored, of course,
So,
scored 1 goal. So I was definitely going very deep in the ranks, like 300 200K. I was not panicking at all. Again, I was thinking, okay, I will do some other things. And the final nail for me was when Liverpool have a double game week. And of course, this season I triple captained Mane when he was injured in the
yes,
ninth
yeah,
minute.
I did the
And
same.
people around me, yeah, were having the Salah. So when you, it's like when you are, I know that you are still, yeah, got the ranking inside 100K this year. But when you are summarize the things like what's happening to me that year when I dropped Alexander Arnold and he's having 24 points, when I triple captain Mane and he's injured. So yeah, I was never getting after it a room to improve anything because I was slowly doing the correct all the correct moves after the game week 13, for example, but it was too far and too hard to get that rank.
It just shows that one or two decisions can completely change a season. And I know from that season too, with the Salah, for those that can't remember, Mane and Salah triple game week, sorry, double game week, and so we all captained them, triple captained them, and Mane off injured 9 minutes, Salah went on to score massive, and so it was that simple. It was a huge point swing, and the Alexander Arnold one as well. Obviously, those moved him. History could be repeating itself this year because lots of people have just removed him, and he's just come back, and he's already come back with a clean sheet, and it probably won't be long until he gets some goals and assists as well. What went right in 2014 and 15? I mean, these were two real standouts, amongst some other good ranks, but what went right in these seasons?
I would say that if a very easy answer and the community would like the censor, it's because like I did not was on Twitter and straight after these two top 5K finishes, I'm becoming very active on Twitter. I'm not posting too much, but I'm reading everything. I'm checking all topics, threads, and I'm totally disagree that it's make me worse as a FPL player because it's impossible, really. It's about how the things going. We are looking at the straight facts that my first five seasons in FPL were super great, and the last five seasons I never get a top 10K finish despite the fact that I was going rank into top 100K. So yes, it's definitely the problem in myself. And I'm looking at it every year, trying to make the things different. And I was satisfied with my last season because I was ranked top 10K in game week 13 and 30. And like it was not so hard. But yeah, what goes good in two top 5K finishes? It's a hard question because, first of all, it was a long time ago. Yeah. And I'm not thinking that I'm became totally different player now, yeah. But I would say why it's harder now to get into for me the top 5 or top 10K. It's because the playing field changed really a lot, and I think that nowadays maybe the template in a good meaning are more stronger, and every hit, every incorrect captaincy decisions are punished very strictly. Because previously I was remembering myself as an FPL player. I was captaining Sigurdsson without any kind of scare. I was captaining Adebayor for his like holes in Tottenham. Currently, I'm not doing it, and I could not say that I'm scared of it. I'm just seeing that it's more logical to captain maybe Salah or other players. But right now, if you're really not captain, for example, Salah for one of his holes, it would totally destroy your rank. I'm not thinking that previously we have such strong template in a good meaning. Like everyone on Twitter have a good start to the season, I think, and the Fantasy Football Scout. We were nailed like five or six players that gives us a lot of points. Previously, the variance was great, and it's how it is right now. Yeah, you need to adapt to this. I'm not saying in any way that it's bad or good. You just, if you want to be a good manager, you need to adapt to everything that surrounding you in FPL.
Yeah, I mean, I've noticed that as well. We have much more information, so we can see why we are going up the rankings, down, or staying the same. And as you say, why we're getting punished so much if we dare to be different with the captaincy or with a different transfer. I mean, you can see this week was a good example with Mo Salah. Was his effective ownership where I was in the rankings was about 180%. So if I
Yeah,
didn't
it was
own
the same.
him, it would have been curtains. It would have been terrible. And even if I didn't captain him, it still would have dented my rank. And that is the situation we're in now. There are so many. It's not that there's so many more managers, because the proportion who own a particular player wouldn't change, but there are more managers who are better, who were clued up. And I don't know if you noticed, but I noticed one thing when Antonio was heavily captained, hugely captained. And I don't think Antonio would have been hugely captained 3, 4 years ago, or his equivalent. And but because people know, they can just see, they watch the games, but they look at the stat. And you were saying about Twitter as well, and the information. Do you think when you've got more information coming to you, as you were saying, in recent years, how do you filter away the noise? How do you look for the key information and ignore the stuff that's just in the way?
I would say that for me, it's working that way that I have a strong opinion about myself as a manager, and it's working for me the way that when I see some topic or interesting discussion, if I'm disagreeing at the beginning of that discussion, strongly disagreeing, not because like I have arguments about a lot of arguments about it why I'm disagreeing, just when I see that I'm totally not about it, and I won't do it, and I'm not that kind of manager. And I just did not check into details of this discussion. For example, if I have the difference from like Trent, Cancelo, and Livramento and White, and I see the topic for defenders which are could really interest you and so on. If I'm really interested in defenders, I would look into this topic. But if I do not need defender for now, and I know that before I read this topic, I was not having like the need to have another defender and to add them to my watch list, I would not recommend to check this topic because you would think that, oh, it's a great idea. And I really now understand that I need the new defender like Lucas Digne. But if at the start of the day I did not need any defenders, I will search, for example, the discussion about midfielders that interests me. And so, yeah. I'm just trying to minimize the info that I would got
That
from
is a good
Twitter.
point. You go with your initial thoughts
Exactly. Yeah.
and not be tempted otherwise. So I guess Trent Alexander-Arnold is a good example of people saying, get rid of him, get rid of him. And you're probably thinking, no, I'm not going to get rid of him now. Not only because when you did a couple of seasons ago it didn't work out, but because he's a good defender. You don't need to replace him. Who would you replace the best defender with? Your attitude as a captain, as a manager, but also captaining your own team. But as a manager in the fantasy game, are you a risk-taking manager? Are you a safe manager? How would you describe yourself?
When I was thinking about this dilemma, because everyone asked this question, of course, I think that I would be more in the category of safe managers in terms of I'm not right now, I'm not talking about hits because I usually take hits in all my previous seasons. I have like something between 15 and 20 hits all over the season, so it's a great number of hits. But I am not a risk manager in terms of I did not do the moves like Laterizer or Luke, for example, when I am just switching my midfielder to, for example, Bale against Sheffield when he was not in template, or for Foden, or for 1 week punt. So I'm not taking this one punt at all because I could switch, for example, like minus four hit to get De Bruyne, for example, for this game, because I know that he's a classy player. He will always be nailed when he's fit, and I could justify this hit. But I did not take 1 week punts and all that other stuff, not because I do not think it's great. I always want, like, for this game against Burnley, I always want Foden, I always want Sterling or other players. But I know that I have the long-term strategy, and I should think about, like, FPL is not about 1 game week. And it's funny, but every time if I take some similar punts in a general long-term game, I always think that it was not the right move. Maybe it's working for some people if they nailed all their risky picks, but I always think that after it happened for me, of course, because I'm playing like it's my 11th season and I take that punt too. But it was always like after 2 or 3 weeks, I think, okay, if I was not doing this one punt, I will make my planned move. It would benefit me long term. So I'm just not that kind of manager, yeah.
Do you look 4 game weeks ahead, 8 longer?
I'm generally did not have the rule to look at 4, 6, or 8 game weeks. I'm looking not like the minimum of 3 game weeks, but if I see that the player will have like 3 next beautiful game weeks, I think that I already could buy him because 3 game weeks is enough to justify the transfer. And in the best possible case, the player will got me points. He will maybe price rise and I could sold him after it, but even if it's not working, okay, I will just drop him because he even will have a worst fixtures after it. Of course, I like the patch of fixtures like 6, 8 game weeks when the player have a brilliant fixtures and you did not get the reasons to not to get him.
What do you think you would change about how you are an FPL manager to become a, say, a top 100 manager?
I would say that I would not speak about top 100 because it's amount of huge luck about top 100. My aim is to have a 1 3-digit finish because I see in my career history because I think that it's really achievable if you are nailed all players, if you are correctly seeing the trends of the season, and it's much more achievable without a huge amount of luck. It's just about the correct decisions, be very patient, and at the same time, do not miss any significant bandwagons. So yeah, I'm hunting for the top 3-digit finish. And also my really aim to finish inside top 5K first time in 6 years. And I will just prove to myself that I'm not changed as a manager and I could adapt to current reality with Twitter, with a lot of information and other stuff. So yeah, this season I am really very, very hyped up to get the top 5K finish.
Okay, well, I mean, you are in, I think currently you're just outside the top 5K, but you're actually within the top 5K because you've got some points coming off your bench and you've got some players to come on for the remaining match tonight
Yeah,
against.
thanks to Ragaboli and Live FPL, I know that today I have Saka and White, and even if they got me 2 points, I will be inside top 3K after today's
Wow.
match.
Okay, so after, no matter what happens, unless they get sent off or score 5 own goals or something, you will be in the top 3K by tonight. So well, let's move on to your game week going into game week 9. So do you want to tell us the players you've got? Do you want to just sort of go through the players you've got, why you've got them, and which, if any, you're thinking of removing? And I think you already said you've got your eye on Lukaku, presumably Ronaldo leaving there. So, do you want to sort of start at the back with Sanchez and then take us through your team?
I already wild carded, first of all, need to admit it. So, yeah, I have a Sanchez in goal with a steal as a backup. I have big three defenders like Cancelo, Alexander Arnold, and Reece James from Chelsea. And I have Livramento and White as the backup. And I'm super happy with this defense, maybe except with James, but I hold him from game week 3, like on wild card, or I think game week 4 or 5, yeah, on my wild card. And I did not sold him just because Rudiger got injuries and some other stuff. So yeah, I'm just holding him for now and hopes that he'll play in one of the next 3 games, like very easy games for Chelsea. Yeah. The midfield is template, very template, Salah, Rafinha. And also, I have Sar, Saka, and Sissoko from Watford.
And up front, who have you
And
got
my
there?
forward line is Jimenez, Antonio, and Cristiano. Yeah.
So who's how many transfers have you got for game week 9, and who's in and who's out?
Yeah. As I said at the beginning, I'm trying to find a lot more patience with transfers, with hits that I have got previously. So this year I did not take one hit. And it's one of the reasons I think that I'm in top 5K Because, for example, last week I play him instead of Livramento, and it was very hard decision for me. But I say to myself that I am changed. I will play Livramento no matter what it means. And you see that Chelsea did not keep the clean sheet, and Livramento gets the assist against Chelsea. So the decision to not take a hit in such, for example, like previously for me, it was the obvious case to take a hit for a Chelsea defender because James was injured and Chelsea have a great fixtures. But I did not take a hit, resist to it with all my power, and Livramento get me the points. Yeah. So I will try to make the steady moves and planned moves. And as I said at the beginning, again, I will buy Lukaku instead of Ronaldo. And if I did not get any like, obvious things like Lukaku injury adapter or some other stuff, I will captain him this game week against Norwich.
Okay. Do you think this season one of the factors behind success this season is because we have players like Livramento, Ben White, Shane Duffy at Brighton as well, that these are bench players, but you don't need to be rushed into making a hit because if another player like say last week Rafinha's not available or you've got a Chelsea defender who may or may not play, it doesn't matter because you can rely on Livramento or Ben White to come on. In my case, I could even rely on Connor Cody this week. But you've got a variety of defenders. Do you think that that is the secret to success this season? Is be patient because trust in Livramento.
I would say that I think it's the strategy for success absolutely every season to find that players. Like the prime example of last season is Souček, and he started the season at the price of 5, and I got him like from the maybe third or fourth game week when I see that really he is always in the box, and he was always almost my first sub, and I got like almost all of his points because we got the postponement of matches with COVID and other stuff, but he always was my first sub and I was relying on him very much. So I think that correctly identifies the gems of every season, like Souček, Livramento this season. It's very important in FPL because it's not only give you the real motivation to not use the transfers that you don't need to spend points for it, but it's really gives you points because it showed that last season, maybe I do not remember, like 3 or 4 seasons ago, 3 seasons ago, we have Wan-Bissaka in Crystal Palace, yeah, like a first sub for the 4 millions. So it's every season we have that kind of players that are really important, and you should nail them from the beginning and concentrate on other issues in your team.
I'm thinking about players like, say, Rafinha, for example. Now, I'm not a professional footballer, never have been, but I've noticed that he's rather good. He's very good indeed. And he's very undervalued for what he is and offers, even a relatively poor team like Leeds. And I say that in comparison to Brazil. So, is it also important to identify those players? You've got Rafinha, you've got Saka, Sarr as well. And how has you being a footballer impacted on that? Because you must, been in teams either yourself or teammates around you, and you think, wow, that player's really good. And
Yeah.
do you see that in certain players, and does that make you want to get them in?
Yes, but I would mention one very important thing is that you should understand that and I think that all of FPL players understand that managers, that the good player is not always a good FPL option. For example, like Pogba is an absolutely beast on his day, and he's a great player, but he's not an FPL option right now. He was at some points, but he's not an option right now. So, for example, with Rafinha, I would even say that it's just a clear mistake from FPL to price him at this point. It's not giving us any alternatives because in Fun Team he priced the same as Bamford, like 7 and 5 million, and it's really interesting to pick between them. But in FPL, Rafinha for 6 and 5, it's just totally unacceptable, I think. I'm very happy with that price, and I just insta got him from the like second or third game in my team because it was hard start with Manchester, and I was lucky that he even not scored in a game against Manchester the first game. So Rafinha is absolutely brilliant footballer, and the most important is that the way Leeds playing, he's always got the moments. The guys, if you check the Leeds game, they know that Rafinha is super good Leeds players, and they always try to find him. They always try to feed him, and he will like shot. He will do some magic. So it's totally easy to have an FPL that kind of players like Rafinha, Grealish, and Aston Villa, because you need to watch just one game of this team to understand that every player in this team try to find these players on the pitch. And it's not always lead to like holes, like 10, 20 holes for Rafinha. We could see it, but he will get points. He will get a lot of points if there would be no injuries or some other stuff. It's totally easy to predict when the player got so much touches on the third, I think, area of the pitch, and the team basically surrounding him on the opponent's half.
I'm
So
going to put another picture up on screen here. This is the next eight fixtures, so we can sort of think back to your team and how it's faring. So you were talking about Lukaku. Well, that's because Chelsea have got great fixtures. They've only really got, well, I would say they've only got one bad fixture with Manchester United, but I don't think their defence is good at the moment. So I think there's pretty much great fixtures the next eight for Chelsea. Mentioned well, Livramento with Southampton. Southampton got great fixtures. Leeds with Rafinha, great fixtures as well. And we've got Leicester up there as well, and Brentford. So just going back to your team. Looking at Brentford, so Mbeumo and Tony are key targets really for Brentford's kind run. And also Leicester have got a great run. And Jamie Vardy is the top striker. I think he's the top player even, but just behind Salah. So he's taking Mo Salah away. He's the one player to get. So there's no Vardy and no Brentford in your team. Do you have any plans to get them in?
I will definitely get the Brentford players, and most likely it would be both of them at some point, like in 3 or 4 game weeks, because I'm not rated Mbeumo as such a great player, but at his price again, it's easy to get him because he will get the goals. He's shooting a lot. I'm not really seeing him as a super good footballer because all of his shots at the post, it's not like it's going in. It's more like it's going out and it's hit the post. Against, I see a lot of Brentford games, and Tony is a super good footballer. He's composed his shots. If he get his shots, I would say like Mbeumo maybe will get some like 5 big chances and score 1 or 2 goals. But with Tony, you could be confident if he will get like 3 big chances, he would score 2 of them, I think, very easily because he is a great footballer. But again, with the price of Mbeumo, I understand the hype in community because it's easy to get him for these fixtures for 5 and 5. And I'm will like join this train, I think, at some point if anything not happen. With Vardy, it's a very, very hard case for me because it's not easy to get the forward of his price if you have the place only for like Lukaku for the next 3 and Kane around the corner with the great fixtures. So it's just the question that I will not restructure my team so hard to get Vardy. And even with that in mind, Leicester, everyone seems like forgetting about the Leicester before Man United. They were terrible. I know that Vardy still got goals, but it's never making decision easy for me if I see the team is definitely not playing really well, and to buy Vardy. I know that he's having a huge goal threat. He's always scoring. He's having penalties, but I will not restructure my team very strictly to get him, even with the fact that Leicester have a great fixtures.
I mean that shows the patient approach being a manager there. It was interesting what you say about Mbeumo and Tony as well. So some people will look at someone who shoots and hits the woodwork all the time, a lot, as they're close. And you look at that as thinking, well, they're not accurate. And Tony is the one. If you were to only get one, it would be Tony, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, obviously Tony, because he's having the penalties too.
Yeah.
He's a 90 minutes man having the penalties. So yeah, it's a great bonus. It's in all around the pitch. And one interesting thing that I want to mention, I was wanting to mention it even before in our discussion, like how I watch the games as a footballer. So basically, there are two prime examples of how I see the players in FPL and like as a real football players. At the highest point of this metric is Son from Tottenham,
Okay.
because you should see not only his goals, but you could always see at his big chances missed and his shots that were saved by the keeper. It was actually almost all the time. It's a great shot. He's always know what to do in the box. He have a plan, and his shots are very predictable in a good way. It's very rarely to see that Son get into the good position, and I'm not saying about scoring, but he's over. Yeah, we know that he's over exceeding his XG, but he's always having a good shots. And the opposite of it, of course, it's Adama Traore, but it's not because like he's not scoring and having big chances. You could just see that when he arrived in the box, when he have a clear one-on-one, he just don't know what to do. He just don't know what he want to do, how to score the goals, and it's a real problem because there are a lot of players that are getting into the box and they do not have that pattern of like shouting. And when the player does not understand what he really wants to do, he will not score the goal. But at the same time, the very important thing in FPL, because FPL it's not about the real life players. We should understand that we must have zero stereotypes about any player, and especially, for example, Traore. I did not say that at some moment with a formation, maybe with some confidence boost when he will finally score one goal, he will have a period when you should own him in FPL. I know that there are a lot of stuff about like after the hard season start for Lucas Digne, like I will never get this player. For Mahrez, like he did not really, I do not know how he did not score against Burnley, but he's actually a great player. And if we see clear patterns that, for example, he is resting in the Champions League in future and playing in the Premier League, you should buy that kind of player. So every player could have his good patch in FPL, but from the real life perspective, you should try to find the players that have the predictable patterns in terms of efficiency of their shots, moments, how they are working in the box with the ball. So, yeah, that's very important because Wilfried Zaha, for example, I am very like to watch this player. He's absolutely great player on the ball. He's given very much to his team, but I'm waiting, like every year, I'm waiting that he will score a lot of goals because he is always going into good positions. But he really has the bad shots in terms of efficiency. He's always like doing some incorrect decisions in a good positions, like, and that's do not giving him the chance, I think, to play in Manchester United when he was in that team because the coaches see it too. So it's he's really great, but I'm waiting every year that he will definitely improve, but it's not happening.
Just before we go, I just wanted to put this image up here, which is this is the big chances so far. No, sorry, last four matches. So these are the what you were talking about, efficient players. So these, in a way, are the players that you like the look of, not just as an FPL manager, but as a football player. You know, you wouldn't mind being in a team with some of these players, I presume. So we've got over the last four matches, I've highlighted those who've had at least four big chances. And top of the tree is Salah with five, and then Saar at Watford with five. Now Saar's in your team. Watford have bad fixtures, but are you tempted to keep him because of what you were saying about, you know, they might Watford might lose, but Saar is an efficient player.
I will not keep Star because I will give him the two next game weeks, definitely. And it's good fixtures, but Watford is really right now, it's they are too bad as a team. And even with a Sar that having a great potential to points, and we like the narratives like the Watford will lose 5-1 and Sar will score that one goal and give you points, that's all you need. We have alternatives. That's very important because we have like Mbeumo for 5-5 with a team that will play much better than Watford. And I will gut with my two hands Mbeumo over Sar, even if I think that Sar is a better footballer than
Right.
Mbeumo.
Okay.
So yeah, I will give the Sar to next game weeks and he will go for me. And most likely for Mbumo.
Okay. And we've got some other the others with four big chances in the last four. Vardy, who we've already spoken about. Callum Wilson is interesting, but as an FPL option, it's his injury record. But if I see him on the team sheet, I think he's going to get a goal, and indeed he did at the weekend. Calvert-Lewin, same thing. Four big chances, but he's been injured. Son, you've already mentioned there, and you've been very impressed by him. And Trincão at Wolves is perhaps one to watch, or not one to watch. So what? Why? So okay, some people will look at these stats and see, hey, Trincão's on there. Is this the same number of big chances as Son? But you shake your head. What is it about a player like him that is not a good FPL app option?
Yeah, Trincao from Barcelona is a very talented player, and I see the first Wolverhampton games when Wolves were flying against Leicester, Tottenham, and Man United, and he's a really good player. But I will never ever believe that he will become a great FPL option because he is more like Traore in terms of he's creating the moments. He will be on the end of some passes, but I think that his maximum in terms of FPL points is like 4 goals, 5 assists all over the season. But he's a great player. And the opposite to it, of course, like players like Callum Wilson, he's a great option. If he would be injury free, like it's no brainer to gut him because even in Newcastle team, he always like scoring, have a penalties and so on. Yeah. I would say that sorry, I would compare like Trincao, for example, as the case for Trincao with Saint-Maximin, but Saint-Maximin is really progressing well. He's the same kind of player, like he's got tricks, brilliant technique. He's way above all Newcastle players in terms of his abilities. But he's really progressing in opposite to Zaha. I think that this season we are starting like from laughing that Saint-Maximin isn't forward option, yeah. But he's really scoring some goals and he improved his end product very well. So I am impressed with progress of Saint-Maximin for this season particularly.
And the final name to mention in this table is Mane at Liverpool. He's come under criticism the last couple of seasons for perhaps not fulfilling his potential, but he's still scoring. He's still putting the underlying stats. Are you impressed with a player like Mane? Do you hear the criticism sometimes over the last year or so and think, well, that's odd?
Mane was always my one of my favorite players in like FPL options, not like the player from the real life, but from FPL options. I was always one of the first to double up on Liverpool midfield, like Salah plus Mane, because they are very costly and not everyone go for this combination. I would say that last season Mane was really bad with his misses of big chances because the Jota came into Liverpool and it's a little bit play, I think, with his confidence because he was like fighting with Salah for these passes, goals, and all other things. And even adding Jota in the mix did not help last season. But I think that Mané generally is a very strong footballer and he's always like scoring goals, like in no matter circumstances, he will score goals. So clearly, you see that by the end of the last season, everyone was jumping on Mané too because he's having a great form at the end of last season. And I think that he already overcome all these problems, like with Jota, with rotation. He understand right now that Klopp give him the understand season the Mané was first to be benched, for example, and he was like very angry when he was subs in like 15, 16 minutes, I remember, against Crystal Palace. But this time flies, he understands that Salah is benched too. And Klopp doing great work to protect all of his players. And he's starting to gain his confidence again. So I'm really seeing that at some point you could see that Salah plus Mané would be a great option this season.
And just before we go, I noticed in your team for game week 9 as it is at the moment. You've got the captaincy on Salah. If you get Lukaku in, would you captain Lukaku or would you keep it on Salah?
I would captain Lukaku just because, you know, people like right now trashing the Man United after their display against Leicester. And it's correctly, but try to remember how much times Man United and exactly Man United with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was like trashed for their displays. Then they have a hard fixture and they got from it like 0-0 or some kind of stuff. I'm not saying that Liverpool would not win this game against Man United. Of course, it's not so popular thing right now to say, but I will say that this team definitely can give a battle to Liverpool, and it's so obvious when Lukaku playing against Norwich, even like if he's having a little bit harder game, maybe it would be the option to discuss it, but right now it's like trying to be too clever for me to captain Salah just to show the people, like, you know, you see Salah will not blank. It's Man United, it's only Man United, but on the and the opposite end you have Norwich, and the only issue if Lukaku will be not rested for like 20 or 30 minutes against Malmö in Champions League, I will be worried that he could be rotated against Norwich. But generally, I will captain Lukaku definitely.
Okay, interesting. Vanya, thanks so much for joining me. It's been really interesting, really fascinating getting that view, not just for someone who's doing fantastically well this season, but has done so well in the past and has also got that footballer perspective on it. So it's interesting, some of the things where you sort of know, you know that Son is very clinical and efficient, but it's getting that footballer perspective of, you can see in their eyes, you can see the sort of player that you have on the pitch with you, that they're the player you want to pass to, and that they should at the very least have a very big chance to score. But that's very fascinating, and good luck with your game week. Good luck with the rest of the season. And thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, thanks very much, John. It was really a great pleasure. Shout out to everyone, guys. See you. And thanks for your content creating. Thanks, everyone.
Cheers. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.